I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. David Yip joins me now. The famed actor is coming to Vancouver later this month in a production of a show he wrote and that he'll star in, Gold Mountain. It plays at the Clutch on the Cult, I should say, the 23rd of October to the 4th of November 2012. It's a show that's based on his father's life. In fact, he plays his father. We see his father immigrate from a small village in China to war-torn Liverpool. You can see a trailer of the show on YouTube, and it's a striking production that utilizes projections, lighting, and sound. It's a theatrical experience. It's multimedia. We'll get Mr. Yip to tell us about the show and more. The show has played in Europe and is a co-production of Le Deux Mondes in Montreal. David Yip has been an actor for nearly 40 years now. He's known for his title portrayal in the 1981 BBC drama The Chinese Detective. He's also appeared in Doctor Who, Brookside, and films such as Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, A View to a Kill, Hamlet, and Entrapment. He's got numerous theatrical credits as well. His website is at davidyip.co.uk. Visit theculch.com for tickets and information on Gold Mountain. I'm very pleased to welcome to the Plant on the Line program David Yip. Mr. Yip, good morning.
It's a great pleasure to speak to you, Joseph.
The same. Thanks for joining us. So what in this show is about your father's life? I mean, it's not really... Is it based on his life, or is it just sort of loosely based?
Well, let me tell you the story. But basically, in the late 80s, I was approached by a well-known publishing company called Faber & Faber in the UK.
Right.
And they asked me out for lunch, and they said... And during this lunch, a man called Will Sulcombe said to me, would you write a book about the Chinese in Britain? And my mouth fell open. I said, well, that sounds like a very academic book, if I may say so. I'm an actor. And basically, that took 5 minutes of the conversation. And the rest of the lunch, I talked about what it was like to be brought up in Liverpool and my life, basically. And at the end of the lunch, he said to me, that was a really stupid idea I came with, but why don't you just write me something about your life? So I went away and had a thought about it, because, you know, I'm an actor, I wasn't a writer. I had written some documentaries about the Chinese in Liverpool before that, for both television and radio, but I didn't regard myself as a writer. But my father, who came over to England in about 1941 from China, and was a merchant seaman, like many of his contemporaries who came over from China at that time were, He was, people would call him a bit of an eccentric, but quite honest, I think he actually now was very ill. Uh-huh. And he'd go to bed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and he'd wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I wasn't living in Liverpool at that time. I wasn't living in Liverpool by then. I'd gone to London and, you know, was living there. And so the only time I could really speak to him was very early in the morning. And I used to have these regular conversations with him, and for like 10, 15 minutes, he was absolutely fine. He could tell me anything that was happening in the world in terms of what was happening in the news.
Yeah.
And then a switch would go off in his head, and he'd tell me this story. And it was like he'd never, you know, we'd been talking about it forever. And the problem is, I never could catch this story very well. So in the end, I recorded him. It took me many months, and I didn't record it on smart gear. It was very, very amateurish tape. And then I transcribed it, and slowly but surely, a story came out of his childhood and why he had to leave Canton, Guangdong, the area of China, and he kept coming to Liverpool, and all the things he did. And I've got to say, I was quite shocked, really, because it's not an endearing story. It's very shocking.
Yeah.
It's dark, and I suppose I could say, and every wrong decision my father could have taken, he took. But it was interesting. It got me thinking. But I did realize that, actually, having looked at this story, and at this time in my life, I wasn't a great fan of my father. In fact, I had a great deal of disrespect for him.
Yeah.
But I realized even I couldn't write a story that I would have to write about him while he lived.
Yeah.
And then my father died. My mother had already died. And I put this away, and one of the themes of writing Gold Mountain was really about, I can't really speak for Canada, but you know, you have a huge Chinese population, Asian population.
Yes.
We don't in the UK, it's much smaller, but we have a very, very old tradition of it. Liverpool is one of the oldest Chinese communities, is the oldest Chinese community in Europe. But whenever, as I said before, I've made some documentaries, and trying to get British British Chinese people, or Chinese people generally, in the UK, to tell their stories was very difficult. Over lunch, over a meal, or over a drink, they'll tell you everything. They'll show you photographs, they'll tell you amazing stories. The moment you say, can I write this? Can I put a camera in front of you? Can I put a microphone in front of you? They'd shut up.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. For 20 years, this story just sat there. And then, cutting a long story very short, Unity Theatre in Liverpool, Liverpool had just been awarded the 2008 European Capital of Culture. So this is now 2007, and we were building up to this, and we were very excited, and I finally agreed to try and put something together for this theatre. And I got together with another writer called Kevin Wong, and we threw some ideas around, and we knew it had to be either a play for one actor or two, because of budgetary things.
Mm-hmm.
And after about 6 months, I just realized, as a straightforward piece of theatre, it wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to work, because I'd also had this idea that it couldn't just be about a domestic story alone of a father and son. I always wanted to put in next to it the sort of 20th century history of China. That may seem very grandiose, but it was just the idea of both coming at the same time. Anyway, to cut a very long story short, I said to the Unity Theatre, this story is dead. It's not going to work on stage. I've got other things to do in my life. But luckily, Graham Phillips, who is the artistic director of Unity Theatre, happened to go to Montreal to meet various theatre companies, and he met Daniel Mayer, who is one of the artistic directors of Les Deux Mondes in Montreal, a French training company. Right. They do multimedia theatre, and they liked the idea. And for some strange reason, they invited us over, and Kevin and I went over to have a discussion with them. And they looked at this very rough script. We didn't have a proper script even. Yeah. We had ideas. And they looked at it and said, okay, and they came up with some ideas, visual ideas, which to me then suddenly brought this world onto the stage. Because I heard in your introduction, you were saying about the clip, our set consists of two screens, two projectors, and a lot of computers. And what we do, and what they do, there are three of them, Daniel Mayer, Yves Dubai, who does all the video, photographs, all that, and Michel Robidoux, who does all the music, sound, soundscapes, and I really mean they all become characters in the plays, and with their ability, they're genius in a way.
Yeah.
We were able to bring the world onto the stage. I mean, at one point, we bring the North Atlantic because it's a story about when my father arrived in Liverpool when he was 16 years old. Bought a place on a blue funnel ship as a merchant seaman, just as the Japanese were coming into Hong Kong. Within a year, he was on the Atlantic convoys from the UK to North America and Canada. And he didn't actually get sunk himself, but dramatically in the play he gets sunk. And we were able to bring that onto the stage in a way which blew my mind. It's amazing. Suddenly meeting this company was a change of life. I'm, as you said again earlier in your introduction, I'm 40 years in the profession.
Right.
I've had a very classical theatre and film background. I've always worked in, you know, straightforward stuff, and I've never done multimedia theatre in my life. And then I meet this company, and you suddenly realise, wow, you know, the way they approach theatre, the way they approach a scene, you know, to me a scene is about people having a conversation in words.
Mm-hmm.
But then suddenly a film becomes part of it, a photograph becomes part of it, a sound, a colour, you know, a lighting effect, whatever. And that took a bit of learning, I've got to say. And we have a wonderful young actor called Eugene Sulla, who plays the younger version of the sort of David Yee character, which is based very roughly on me. And he was much more, because he's younger, he's done a lot of this sort of stuff. He tuned into it very quickly, but it took me a little while. So that's how we got going.
Well, what's it like to play your father, and then at the same time to see yourself on stage like that?
Well, I have to say, like you say this all the time, I'm not playing my father.
Yeah.
I'm playing a character called Yuli, who's got my dad's in there somewhere, but it's not my dad, as I say, because we use dramatic license. But it's, well, I'm going to tell you, when we opened it, because it was a French-Canadian company, we did, and they have these amazing technical facilities in Montreal. We were originally going to open the production in Montreal, and it made so much sense because of what they had. And the Unity Theatre in Liverpool is not a production house. It's a receiving house for modern, adventurous theatre. And but by dint of scheduling, Leathermont couldn't open it in 2010. So we opened it in Liverpool. And I believe in serendipity and all this, but my father died in the house opposite the theatre. So it was quite emotional for me. And then all my family weren't going to come and see it. And I'm one of eight children. And I have a lot of cousins and things like that. And we're very... The Yip family is, you know, we're well known in Liverpool, generally, just as a family, well respected, just as a family, not just because of me or anyone else, but all my family. And I was terrified, really, and it was an emotional thing to bring the story to stage, because I was very keen. One of the main elements also in the story to me was to write some myths, because my father was an opium addict by the time he was about 13 years old. Uh-huh. And of course, I don't know about Canada, but certainly in British history and British mythology, the Chinese have become synonymous with, you know, opium dens and right. and whites, you know, white slavery and all this thing. I've got to say it's always angered me, because I also know my British history. I know why opium was taken to China. I know that, you know, the British forced opium into China. And it is interesting how when the British aristocracy treated opium as a treat, mm-hmm. it was fine. But the moment working class people, or certainly foreign people, started using it, then it became something terribly bad. And the Chinese community that I know throughout Britain, opium hangs over their head like the sword of Damocles, you know. They are terrified to talk about it because they're embarrassed by it. And for me, I wanted to say, no, let's talk about it. My father used opium because it was there, but a lot of Chinese seamen used it at sea because their conditions are very poor, they earned very little, and they wanted to save as much as they could. And by using opium, they didn't eat most of the time. You know, right. they allowed them to work harder, whatever. I'm not making excuses. Opium is opium. Taking it is where it ruined my father. It ruined my father's life in a way. But I still think it's important to have a conversation about it. And one of the things I'm pleased about since Gold Mountain has come out, has been seen since 2010, is that there is a conversation. Other people come out now and start talking about their families. Younger people, the grandchildren of these people, of these families, are talking about it now and saying, oh, grandma said this to me, granddad said this to me. And if I wanted one thing to come out of Gold Mountain was the idea that, because I always said, in a 40-year career of acting, and I've done many documentaries, played in films, done theatre about China, and there's been some of us about Chinese people, but we've never written by Chinese people. Right. Never come from our own story. Where was our own voice? And it's always written by other people. Now, don't get me wrong. I know that you don't have to be Chinese to write about the Chinese. You have very talented writers who can do that. But it's also important just to hear our own stories from our own mouths. And so, for me, Gold Mountain was the opportunity to do that and to encourage others to do it. Now, in the course, you must excuse me because I talk for
a bit. No, that's fine. Yeah.
You want to get a word in because it's your show.
No, it's fine. No. No, go ahead, David.
Well, it was just to say that, you know, along with the opium set, was also, for example, there's an episode in the play about the Shanghai seamen.
Right.
And what happened historically was that during the war, when you did Atlantic convoys and things, most of the seamen were paid a bonus for doing this very dangerous work. I mean, you know, but only the white seamen were paid this. And on the same boat, there'd be white seamen and things, and there'd be Chinese seamen and others who weren't paid it. And eventually the Shanghai seamen went on strike. Now, it's well known historically now that obviously the early Communist Party from China was involved in encouraging these guys to strike. But they did strike. They didn't. They never got equal pay, but they did eventually get this bonus. But when the war ended in 1946, and I'm ashamed to say it was a Labour government that was in power,
yeah.
And it was also the trade unions who really pushed it because they were all terrified about jobs. But in 1946, the war had ended, and the government, they said, we have to be very careful of this communist ideals of these Shanghai seamen. So what they did, they actually brought a ship into Liverpool in the docks, told the guys there was a ship going out, they needed to get on board. Some arrived and put on the ship. Those who didn't, the police and police went round to their houses and took them out of their houses. So, and a lot of these guys were married to local women, like my dad, uh-huh. and had children. Some were grabbed off the street. And basically, I think it was a few thousand seamen disappeared within a week.
Really?
And were never seen again.
Yeah.
And wives, a guy gone out for a pack of cigarettes, never came back. Wives never knew what happened. And since Gold Medal has come out, I've met children, endless children, and there's a lady in Canada, funny enough, in Vancouver Island,
yeah.
Who came all the way to Montreal to see it when we opened the festival in Montreal 2 years ago, and she never knew her father was a Chinese seaman until she was much older. Huh. And then finally her mother told her that she had been married before, and her dad was a Chinese seaman. He was Shanghai, one of these guys. And there's ripples going on around the world with this. And I'm so excited because I'm one of the things I'm excited about Vancouver is you have this huge population,
right?
And I think it will ring a bell, and I can't wait to get some feedback.
Yeah. Now you mentioned earlier that you've had this sort of frayed relationship with your father, that you didn't respect him. In the course of writing this, and I know now that he's not the character in the play, but there are bits of him in it. Do you think that putting this show together, writing Gold Mountain, that it sort of informed the relationship or maybe improved the relationship, say, with your dad?
Oh, totally, totally. I mean, but it's also, there's two factors in that. Yeah, I mean, if I'd written this, you know, when I was going to write the book, or if I'd written what I'd written, it would have just been totally vitriolic.
Yeah.
This guy was a waste of space. Why did he do this? Why did he do that? Why didn't he do this? But then, when I started writing this, I've been a Buddhist for 15 years. And that also coloured my look of how I had to, because I had to say to myself, you know, what made this guy do what he did? He's my father. First and foremost, I had to respect him as my father. Without him, I wouldn't be here. So what gives me the right to say, you're a waste of space? Because when I go look at what he did, and I've got to say this about my brother's story. When my father told stories, he was always the main man. You know, I did this, I did that. And when they all looked at me, and they all did that, and they all did that. And that comes through in the stories we tell about the Chinese Revolution. Because the Chinese Revolution is happening, and this character, like my father, is supposedly writing letters to Mao and telling him what to do. And it's a bit of a joke, really. But the one thing I've learned in my adulthood and over the years is, for example, people who suffer from Alzheimer's, they may lose most of their memory, but actually the thing that stays with me is early memory, very, very early memory. So I have great belief in the early stories of my father when I was a child, and why he had to leave China, and why he had to leave his family, because his whole family could have been annihilated,
yeah,
because of an argument caused by him in their village, and that's how he ended up going to Liverpool, and also get the whole thing with the opens. So I've had to ask myself the question as a writer: how would I have turned out if I had to go through all that? How would I have turned, you know, leaving from war to war, crossing the world? I mean, it's easy to get on a plane now. I'm coming to Vancouver. It's going to take me 9 hours.
Yeah.
It took him maybe 6 months. You know, in horrific conditions, and any time they could have died. So yes, I have changed. I've had to ask myself huge questions about my father. I've got to say, hand on my heart, I can't say I love my father, because I was never shown love by my father, but I have a deep, deep respect for him as my father, and that's all I can say. And yeah. And the greatest thing I can say is when my family came to see it, and our parents are dead now, and my cousins, my biggest fear was they'd hate it. And I said to them all, look, this is my take on my father's story. you know, this is my take. I am not saying in any way this is history, this is factual, this is my take. You may disagree with it, and you may have your version. But when they all came out, they all said, well, it has touched them all. And that's very pleasing to me. And I suppose, to answer your question, yes, I have come to peace with my dad. Because I've given him respect. I've moved, not him. He can't. He's dead.
Yeah.
I've moved. I've stopped. I've come out of my arrogance of saying, how could you do this to me? How could you be like that? And I've actually looked at him as a human being.
Yeah. So you said off tape that this will be the first time you've been to Vancouver?
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm going to Montreal straight after that, my fifth time. No, I'm really looking forward to Vancouver. I've heard so much about it. It's a country, as a city, I've wanted to visit for a long time. And I've been told by everyone it's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, and this play certainly will strike a chord with audiences here. David, it's been a pleasure talking today. Break a leg.
Well, I hope you, listen, I'd love you to come and see. I'd love you to come and see, and I'd love to chat to you afterwards.
We'll do. Thanks for joining us today.
It's a great pleasure.
TheCults.com, that's for tickets and information, and then David's own website, davidyip.co.uk. David Yip on the line from, I guess, North Oxfordshire in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plantin.